This special podcast, hosted by award-winning radio documentary maker David Freudberg, is presented by the Compassionate Care Initiative at the University of Virginia School of Nursing.
This is the second half of Nurses of the Future, a look at new paths in nursing education. I'm David Freudberg, host of this podcast series entitled Resilient Nurses. We now travel to Minneapolis for a fascinating visit with faculty, students, and graduates of the Center for Spirituality and Healing based at the University of Minnesota. The center, founded in 1997, strives to help people strike a balance among body, mind, and spirit. It's not just about physical health, but also our interconnectedness with each other, the environment we're in, and how we identify a sense of purpose to guide us through life challenges and opportunities. And for nurse educators, that means enhancing an appreciation of the whole person.
Why I even went into leadership is because I realized it is true. We have a culture that was eating their young, a culture where we check ourselves and our wholeness and our well-being at the door in order to go through our tasks after we clock in and make sure that we document and deliver care. And there's so much more about being in care and in service to another that we were missing.
Catherine Todd is director of nursing and hospital operations at a local community hospital in a large healthcare system in the greater Twin Cities. Her doctorate focused on how professionals integrate holistic healing practices into the current medical model. And she's looking for ways to help nurses acquire a greater capability for resilience.
Because when we're not bringing our whole selves, we're missing it for the patient. I've seen that happen. I think we've all been a part of that.
When you don't bring your whole
self.
You're missing something in your care of the patient.
You are. It's very difficult for you to show up and demonstrate true empathy. And I think our goal is to be a solid support for the patients.
Students are so filled with joy and aspiration when they enter nursing. And for many of them, it's a career that they have, you know, deeply, you know, yearned to be in.
Mary Jo Kreitzer, founder of the center, is professor at the University of Minnesota. She helped establish the nation's only doctoral program for nurses in integrative health and healing. As a seasoned nurse educator, she saw a need.
We would nurture them as students, and then when I would encounter them after they had been in practice, sometimes as short as a year or 2 years or 3 years, it was stunning to me how the practice of nursing had impacted them, sometimes very negatively. While they had deeply meaningful experiences and while they still, you know, felt a calling to be a nurse, often they were very raw from the experiences that they had had working as a nurse in the healthcare system. And the amount of stress that they encountered, the impact of sometimes systems that don't work very well, just the emotional impact of kind of caring for people in the most vulnerable times of their lives. What I learned was that they hadn't been prepared for that in this part of their educational process.
Mary Jo Kreitzer is co-editor of Integrative Nursing from Oxford University Press.
One of the most important skills is a skill around self-awareness. And self-awareness is beginning to understand my own strengths, my own challenges, my weaknesses, my vulnerabilities. And that might sound like a simple skill to teach, but in reality, we spend a lot of our lives on autopilot. And we sometimes will arrive at a destination and we don't remember driving there, or we eat a meal and we never remember tasting the food because so much of life is on autopilot. And what mindfulness teaches us is to slow down and be in the present moment. And if I slow down enough to be in the present moment, then I notice what I'm feeling, what I'm experiencing myself, and I'm much more likely to be able to kind of pick up cues if I'm with a patient, for example, or with I'm a family member. So if I had to say where's a starting place in the curriculum of nursing education, I would say beginning with teaching skills of self-awareness and mindfulness would be a really important foundation.
This is the Family Birth Center in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. As director of nursing here, Catherine Todd, a graduate of the University of Minnesota, sees her role as the nurse to her nurse colleagues.
I said, okay, we're going to have a requirement here. I want everybody to start the day in the lounge. I asked them to stand in circle with me, and I had my Tibetan singing bowl, and I closed my eyes and hit the bowl and invited them to breathe and to center themselves. I invite you to take a nice deep breath, settle into your chair, and to think about what they were holding and what they could let go. And then I asked each one of them to go around and tell me what word would you be holding coming in today. And it was interesting: fear, anxiety, stress, restlessness, lack of sleep, all of these things. I'm like, if that's serving you, then you want to nurture it during your day. And if it's not, without judgment, let's figure out how to let go of it. So if it's passing through the doorway into the patient's room, breathe into that space and let go of the anxiety or the stress and find a time that you'll do it. Maybe it's entering your password into the computer. It's amazing. After 3 years of doing that, the transformation in the team. So we only did that. We focused on that piece, and we watched our patient experience scores improve. We watched our quality scores improve. We watched our engagement scores with staff improve. And all we were doing was focusing on mindfulness and resilience in our team. Simple, and it was only 5 minutes in the morning or in between shifts.
Part of the conversation on what can be in the curriculum and what do we teach our next generation is reframing the definition of well-being and taking it deeper.
Megan Voss leads integrative therapy efforts at the University of Minnesota Masonic Children's Hospital. She specializes in oncology, hematology, and blood and marrow transplant.
Wellness has been a fad forever, and exercising and dieting was sort of the start of it. And a healthy weight is important, and those things matter. But what I truly learned in going through the doctorate in integrative health and through Mary Jo and the Center for Spirituality and Healing is that, you know, that health or the physical health, the exercise and nutrition is one sliver of the pie of total well-being. And we've learned to define it differently. We've learned to include things like security and purpose and relationships and environment. And it's all of those things working together that equal true well-being.
Today, Megan teaches a graduate-level course at the center on well-being and resiliency for working health professionals.
One of the things that I talk to my students about is looking at well-being the same way we look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And that bottom level is meeting basic needs: food, clothing, and shelter. And if you're working 12-hour shifts and you're never seeing the light of day and you're getting home and you're collapsing so you can wake up and you can do it all over again, you're barely meeting your basic needs. You're barely making time to go to the bathroom, maybe drink one glass of water at the end of the day and get some form of calories into your body and then sleep. But if you're constantly running on E and you're constantly trying to keep your head above water to meet those basic self-care needs, you're never freeing up space and time to work up the pyramid or to work at those higher levels of self-care, the things that matter in your heart and in your soul and in your mind.
It's so important early on to really invite nursing students to reflect on what does it mean to be a nurse? What does it mean to be a healer? You know, what is really healing?
Mary Jo Kreitzer, director of the Center for Spirituality and Healing.
Often I think we have focused on the technical acquisition of knowledge and skills. And so often students are excited about that, and that's really what they want to focus on, is they want to have skills so that they can, you know, leap into practice.
And that's, of course, very important.
And, of course, that's very important. But one other dimension of well-being that we haven't touched on yet that I think is so important is purpose. And purpose and meaning in our work, in whatever we do, is so vitally important. And purpose is so connected to our health and well-being.
Does purpose give focus?
Purpose gives meaning. Purpose gives meaning to what we do. And so I think, you know, we often talk about stress in the work environment and how do we reduce stress and how do we reduce, you know, burnout. But I think an equally important conversation is how do we enhance purpose and meaning and alignment with purpose and meaning. So I really like, whether I'm working with nurses in a hospital or whether I'm working with nursing students, to really explore with them, who are you and what's important to you? What are your values and what are your gifts and your talents? And how do you want that to be expressed in the work that you do? And, you know, many people went into nursing because they had a deep desire to serve people.
If we have any, they're back in the shelter.
Sometimes nurses discover that because of the nature of the work environment in which they're working, they're so removed from the bedside, that they're either pulled into an administrative post or they're, you know, they're spend a lot of time managing technology or you know, focusing on documentation, all things that are also important. But if we remove nurses too far from the bedside, that can really erode their sense of, you know, purpose and meaning. So what's really important is to help people find alignment in what they do and to find the right fit. And fortunately, in nursing, there are so many opportunities in terms of the clinical settings and patient populations and whether you want to be in direct care, whether you want to be a teacher, whether you want to be in leadership. But I'm helping to guide people to kind of find that right place in the world is critically important. And I think that's really a way to build resiliency.
You're listening to Nurses of the Future, a podcast exploring new directions in education intended to help nurses develop greater capacities for care of the whole patient and in the process for care of themselves. I'm David Freudberg. We continue our visit at the University of Minnesota Center for Spirituality and Healing.
Just about a year ago, I took care of a young man who had four different types of cancer over his short life, and everyone kept talking about what can we do next.
Megan Voss.
He'd been through countless rounds of chemotherapy and two stem cell transplants, and everyone was still talking about what we would do next, even though if you looked at him, this was a body that couldn't take any more treatments. And I would see him for integrative therapies, and we would talk about a variety of things. And when his parents would leave the room, and it was just he and I, with his eyes closed even, he would talk to me about, I know I'm dying. No one's talking about the fact that I'm dying, but I know I'm dying. And I'm okay with that. I just wish everyone else was. And those are the types of things that patients aren't going to share with you unless they know that you're also okay with dying, that you can hold the space for dying, because that's a really tough space to be in.
And also if you're okay with being authentic and vulnerable with them.
Yeah, and non-judgmental. And not to say, no, you're not dying. We're talking about more chemotherapy later today. It becomes this interesting conundrum because the family wants to be strong for the patient and the patient wants to be strong for the family. And you're right, there is no vulnerability even amongst many families. And so how the nurse can bring him or herself to the table and be an intervention is by creating that safe space, setting that stage, modeling vulnerability, and maybe planting the seeds. You know, I would give him ideas of how he might bring that conversation up with his parents in the room, or how maybe his parents might stay in the room while we work together. And these were wonderful parents who also knew. But there's many levels of knowing, and sometimes just because you know something is happening doesn't make it easy for you to be able to address that.
For many families, navigating communication can be complex, especially when intense emotions are inevitable, as in the case of a dying loved one or other health crisis. And these dynamics present a special challenge for nurses, who must wade into territory that's likely to be very charged for the patient, the family, and the provider. Connie Delaney is professor and dean of the University of Minnesota School of Nursing.
I think it is so essential to show, if you will, the side of us that's vulnerable, because at its core, we're calling the question on ourselves, as well as others, on whether we are fear or love-based. Mm-hmm. When we're love-based, this mutual respect, the sharing with one another, the respect for different roles, lifting up our humanness, creates a safety for being authentic about those aspects, particularly in nursing. As you know, when it comes to our relationship with families and patients, we're the most trusted profession year after year.
More even than journalists.
I think so. There is a piece of that most trusted profession that relates back to we are steeped in putting patients and families first. We're steeped in putting students first in academia. So calling the question on we're all human beings, we all have vulnerabilities, and it's okay to be a human being and share.
Because it's more authentic.
It is authentic.
Historically, vulnerability so much has been seen as a sign of weakness and something to avoid.
Mary Jo Kreitzer.
But when we allow ourselves to be vulnerable with another person, that creates the space for the other person to also open up in a way that we can really discover who they are. And so, you know, as a teacher, you know, if I portray to students that I'm all-knowing, that I never make mistakes, that I am perfect, that creates an expectation that students would feel that they had to kind of, you know, be modeling that and sort of be showing up, you know, for me in that way. But when I can, you know, model for my students that I don't know all the answers and that I struggle and, you know, that there's a lot that I don't know and that we're going to be in a process together of co-discovery, that gives them permission, I think, in a whole different way to also be vulnerable and open to me.
Wanda Baker, a pediatric nurse for over 30 years, is pursuing her doctorate in nursing at the University of Minnesota. For health providers, she says practicing self-awareness and being centered are key.
It needs to start right from the get-go. So it's as important as knowing how to use a stethoscope, take a blood pressure, do a lab. It's actually more important, I would say, because it's the foundation from which everything else is built.
Also studying for a doctorate of nursing practice is Maureen Anderson, who's worked in pediatric emergency nursing and home care nursing. She has professional and personal motivations to better understand healthcare for the whole person.
I saw patients frequently come back into the ER doors. It was fairly revolving system, and there was nothing keeping people out. They said, I was told to do this, or I was told to take my meds, but they didn't know how to bring that into their actual lifestyle. And so I was motivated to go back into integrative health to figure out how to make healthcare a little bit more seamless so that we wouldn't just tell patients what to do, but actually how to do it. On a personal level, I'm interested in integrative health and well-being and resiliency because I've been a diabetic for nearly 20 years. and have lived that life where providers have told me what I need to do, but I wanted to find a different way of how to do it. I wanted to find a way that each day I wasn't just going through the diabetic rolls, but I was actually living this holistic lifestyle where it wasn't just eating and activity, but it was incorporating stress management. It was incorporating aspects of spirituality, emotional, the mindset of what is this whole holistic health and well-being that leads to resiliency long term.
And frequently that requires setting aside some downtime for moments of self-reflection and contemplation that can nourish the interior life through meditation and prayer or techniques like yoga that invite nurses to take time for being rather than relentless doing. Maureen Anderson.
I would identify with being more of a spiritual person than identifying with a religion. That's personal for me. But how it looks like in my day-to-day, I wake up in the morning and I say a prayer of gratitude. Just thank you for allowing me to wake up to experience this day. I pray with each of my meals. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to eat. I can eat. I can fulfill the needs of my own physical body so that I can go and provide care for my patients. And I do that in a family setting. I encourage my family to be involved in my prayer. And that has helped me tremendously throughout my own life. And then with patients, I think people are always surprised at how often patients want people to pray with them and just be with them in that sacred space. And that is something that I've always offered to patients, and many patients request it.
At the beginning of my nursing career, I didn't deal with stress very well.
Wanda Baker taught pediatric and family nursing in Nova Scotia, Canada, and has practiced in the central high Arctic.
And I was very much, I would say, a very grounded person to begin with, very mature, but I didn't have any kind of practices developed to sustain myself. So when I faced things that were overwhelming in my nursing practice as well as my personal life, I floundered. It was just an extraordinarily distressing time for me. You know, we had six people die in our immediate family and very close friends within the space of 13 months. And I was the primary care provider, being the nurse in the family, looking after the well-being of everybody who was grieving. I was grieving as well, but, you know, that kind of was tucked aside. And to compound that, I was in charge on nights one particular weekend in the intensive care unit, in pediatric intensive care. And we had four children die that weekend. I took three of them. I carried three of them to the morgue. And that was just, that was my breaking point, quite literally. And I came face to face with my fragility and realized that if I was going to be able to grow as a person and as a nurse, I needed to change what I was doing. So I did. I took time to actually connect with myself and to begin to develop practices that I knew would sustain my own growth, my self-awareness about what I needed. And it just took off from there. I would say the consistent thing that I do almost every day is meditation. And I can probably remove the almost, because if I don't sit on my little pillow, I am in a meditative state while I'm doing something that's a day-to-day activity. So a treat for me is baking bread. So that is extraordinarily meditative.
Can I assume also part of the treat is then eating the bread?
Eating it, smelling it. Everything, right? So it's a whole sensory experience that nourishes me deeply. And you know, my cat, I am very connected to this cat. It's been a wonderful discovery for me over the years. I play the piano. That's a meditative state for me. I tuck in rejuvenation in a walk to the car. I go for a walk around the lake, and I may not walk around the lake. I may get sidetracked by a beautiful leaf that's sitting on the surface of the lake, and I'll stop. And that is what my meditation is. So that's where I refill. And that has been so helpful for me over the years working with children who die, children who have diagnoses that nobody would imagine children should have those diagnoses, and families that are faced with horrific, absolutely horrific choices. They're not choices. And being able to be whole myself so that I can sit there and honor the wholeness in them.
Nurses may encounter similar emotional currents in the neonatal ICU, where Rebecca Beese has performed most of her professional service for a decade. She's pursuing her doctorate at the University of Minnesota as she prepares for a transition to psychiatric nursing. Rebecca will have a dual specialty in integrative health and healing and mental health.
For me, especially working within mental health, and again, going back to those difficult emotions that are that we have to sit with sometimes, having done my own work, I've had depression for many, many years, very serious depression that I had to learn how to sit myself with those emotions, and that's part of where some of that deep reflective practice has come through. And other very difficult experiences, my brother committed suicide, and so having to live with that, being able to hold space for myself has allowed me to hold space for other people who are going through their own difficult, emotionally taxing circumstances. And I find that when I'm able to hold space and accept every single one of those emotions that come up, that they are more willing to sit with those as well and to start being more honest with both me and themselves about what it is they need to go to that next place that healing might start emerging. But there is such a disconnect. People are so afraid to feel difficult emotions that they just want to cut them off and say, not today, I'm not dealing with that. But our bodies still harbor all of that. And that's when we start having some of those complications with health. Oftentimes that there is, for many people with chronic mental illnesses, you will also see other physical symptoms starting to emerge, like diabetes and high blood pressure and chronic pain. So when we start having that integration, and I really believe it's the provider's place to hold that space for all of those difficult things to come up, that then you have some of that deeper level of healing that starts to emerge.
I am self-caring, which is a mind-body-spirit way of being.
Wanda Baker.
And that overflows into everything that I do. So when I nurture and care for myself, then that literally bathes people that I'm caring for in that comfortableness, that presence, that sacred space that we want people to be cared for within. You know, if I was doing an assessment with a child, you know, they may have been on a ventilator, sedated, paralyzed, supposedly not able to be too aware of anything. I believe that they're always aware, and that we bring our presence to that bedside in a healing way, and it impacts their outcomes. You could see it on monitors. You can see the difference between walking in a room in a frenetic, anxious, hyper mode, and comparing that to walking in a room and working step by step and quietly and gently, doing the same amount of work in the same amount of time.
So when you say you can see it on the monitors, are you referring to vital signs?
I'm referring to vital signs, absolutely. As the caring presence of someone is at the bedside, and we have a calm presence there with them, and we're providing care in a loving way, care that involves putting your hands on somebody, listening to them, interruptions in what they were just before you came into the room. So you're in their space. You can soften the impact of that so that when I listened to a chest, or when I did listen to a chest, I didn't see a heart rate pop up because I was able to gently, progressively move into that space that they're within.
We need to start talking more about spirituality and the role that plays within our health and well-being.
Rebecca Bees.
We need to start talking about purpose and what does that look like. We need to start talking about nutrition and the choices that we make every day at the meals that we eat and how we're nourishing our body. We need to talk more about sleep. We need to really start taking a more holistic approach of looking at people in terms of all the lifestyle things, about start talking about community and your relationships, and do those nourish you or do those deplete you? And what can you do moving forward? All these things in our life, they all impact our health and our well-being.
Students at the University of Minnesota School of Nursing Center for Spirituality and Healing. You're listening to Nurses of the Future, part of our podcast series, Resilient Nurses. I'm David Freudberg. You can learn more at humanmedia.org. That's humanmedia.org. And we invite you to subscribe to the free weekly podcast from our public radio series. Lots of stimulating documentaries and dialogues you may be interested in on healthcare and many other topics. It's available at iTunes and Stitcher. That podcast is entitled Humankind on Public Radio. Thanks very much for listening.
This podcast project is supported by the Compassionate Care Initiative at the University of Virginia School of Nursing. To learn more, please visit compassion.nursing.virginia.edu. That's compassion.nursing.virginia.edu.